Thanks for tuning in to KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. This week, people who want to save Seattle's Showbox Theater came to City Hall. They don't want a developer to turn the 80-year-old downtown concert venue into a high-rise apartment building. One of those testifiers was a man who's played the Showbox dozens of times, Ben Gibbard of the platinum-selling band Death Cab for Cutie. Gibbard lives on Capitol Hill, and his latest single, Gold Rush, just happens to be about the swinging of the wrecking ball. Digging for gold in my neighborhood, where all the old buildings stood. And they keep digging it down and down, so that the cars can live underground. They're swinging out of a wrecking ball, through these laughing plaster walls. Just letting all the shadows free. And Ben Gibbard is with us in our studio at KUOW. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You didn't know about the plans to knock down the Showbox when you wrote that song.
I didn't, no. At the time, it was a song just that was written about, you know, not only the changes throughout Seattle, but specifically in my neighborhood of Capitol Hill, and you know, just how I've realized that I connect a lot of my memories to the geography of the city, and when these buildings are knocked down or other things are put in their place, one has to reckon with the passage of time. And. And as my bandmate likes to say, you know, sometimes we put our hard drives in hard drives of memories in physical places. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it's harder to kind of get that information out when the physical space has been demolished.
What's one specific change that found its way into this song or inspired it?
Man, there's so many. But for years, I lived around the corner from Picora's.
The pizza place,
yeah. And it, as, you know, as apartment buildings and condos are going up all around Capitol Hill, there was still this single-story family pizza place on the corner.
Yep.
When they sold that property and it was demolished, that was a particular canary in a coal mine for me, because to me it represented, this is one of the last vestiges of not only, you know, kind of a working-class family establishment on Capitol Hill. Capitol Hill is much more of an adult, young person's neighborhood, kind of always has been. But, you know, Picora's, you'd see little league teams in there and, you know, softball teams when you go in there and grab a pizza or whatever. Yep. Rockers going to shows across the street.
I used to live on Melrose.
Okay. Yeah. So that one hurt in a particular way.
I want to ask you about the feel of the song "Gold Rush," because it's not like it has a melancholy feel. I hear some ambivalence sneaking in, I think, when I hear the chorus. I guess it is "Be this way, please don't change, stay the same." Be this way. I took that as some irony or some self-awareness, like, yeah, I am kind of becoming one of those guys saying, please don't change.
Well, as we were putting the song together, I wanted those lines in the chorus to be almost as if they were, another side of the narrator's consciousness. You know, that there is, I think the verses are very self-aware. I'm very proud of, I believe it's the third verse in the song, 1, 2, 3. Because the third verse in the breakdown says, you know, I've ascribed these monuments a false sense of permanence. I've ascribed these monuments a false sense of permanence. I've placed faith in geography to hold you in my memory. I'm sifting through these. I have done this to myself. No one, you know, Jeff Bezos didn't do this to me.
Yeah.
You know, this is nothing that has been done to me as, you know, the narrator of the song. I have brought this upon myself because of the significance I've placed upon the geography around me. And, you know, I wanted to present the lyrics in the chorus as if they were kind of a more emotional side of the narrator's consciousness, that we're pleading to please don't change. But, you know, they're kind of airy and soaring in the background. But in I like the fact that I wanted to present the vocals a little grittier so that it feels as if it's kind of coming from a more weathered place. You know, it's the narrator is kind of somewhat weathered, maybe a little older, you know, my age or older, and, you know, yet the vocals in the chorus are somewhat very emotional and not so much tethered to, I think, reality in the same way that the verses are.
I was expecting the video to be shot in Seattle. Well, it looks like L.A.
Well, I will tell you, I am not lying when I tell you this. We wanted to shoot the video in Seattle. We could not afford to shoot the video in Seattle.
Why? Why does it cost so much to shoot in Seattle?
I think that's a question for Lynn Shelton and maybe some other Seattle filmmakers. Why Seattle is more expensive to shoot in than Los Angeles. It's I will just diplomatically say it's not as easy to do here as it is in Los Angeles, and it would have been much more expensive. So, you know, my initial thought was like, yes, we need to be walking down, you know, Pike or Pine in Seattle. I mean, this needs to be the scene for this. And we literally, we could not afford to do it here.
Well, whether it's a music venue or a pizza place where you get a slice, talking to Ben Gibbard here of Death Cab, do you ever wonder, am I sliding into middle-aged nostalgia?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, I have to check myself from time to time and wonder if, you know, some of my feelings about my environment are based in my desire to relive my 20s. And I think in most cases, that's not what's driving my feelings on the matter. And I think specifically with the Showbox, you know, I have had so many wonderful evenings at the Showbox throughout my 20s and 30s and even in my 40s. And I want future generations of music fans and performers from this city and beyond to be able to experience this wonderful room as well. It's not, you know, it'd be much easier for people like myself or Duff McKagan or Mike McCready or, you know, Macklemore to just be, oh, that's a bummer. Well, we had great times there, so who cares? Yeah, condos, whatever. We're not even playing there anymore that often anyways. And, you know, I think I know the reason that we all care is because we want to preserve this for future generations so that they can have their experiences there. I've already had my crazy wild nights at the Showbox, you know, and I don't care to relive a lot of them. However, I do want this to be preserved for future generations.
What's so distinctive about the Showbox? It's not a place for unheard of bands like the OK Hotel was, mm-hmm. or the Crocodile breaking new bands. What why does the Showbox mean so much to you?
Well, the Showbox is a really unique venue. Not only is it a place that people in the Seattle area like to go to see shows because of the vantage points from the audience are really great. It holds 1,200 people, but it feels very intimate.
Super intimate.
Really intimate. But I think one thing that, you know, not a lot of people understand is what it means not only to the city but to the country at large. You know, there are a small handful of venues of its size and kind of pedigree that, you know, are institutions in other cities. There's the Fillmore in San Francisco or First Avenue in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. 930 Club in D.C., the Showbox in Seattle. These are venues that, you know, performers, you know, artists, musicians play on a circuit, and when they get to them, you know, they always have great shows. The hospitality is great. The audiences are great. I think anybody who's either played it or gone as a concert goer feels that they're really seeing something special. You know, a show at the Showbox is not just a show at your local bar. It feels like a special event. And because it's about a 1,200 capacity venue, you know, a lot of the acts that are playing there are, you know, they're starting to make a particular rise. And for some acts, it's the last club that they're going to play. For some acts, it's the biggest club they're ever going to play.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, because
it's
of
on
that,
to theaters next.
Yeah, but it is a very interesting size that is both feels intimate, yet also it feels like a real stepping stone in one's career.
Or stadiums, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not many people can pull off the stadiums anymore. But, you know, Pearl Jam is, of course. But
yeah.
But yeah, so, I think that's one thing that I've really wanted to press upon people as this conversation kind of unfolds about saving the Showbox, is that this is not just our venue. This is a venue that is part of a legacy of not like-minded venues, but similar venues around the country that are very special to the artists and performers that get to stop off at them.
You know, some people are saying we need high-rises in the city. That's part of the more living housing units, the more the price gets affordable. Does that enter in for you?
I don't think that argument holds in this particular case. You know, the Seattle Times had a story a couple of months ago that was kind of investigating vacancy rates down in Belltown, and they determined that roughly 26% of the high-end rentals in Belltown were vacant. So this isn't, in my opinion, this isn't an issue of we need more housing. We certainly need more affordable housing in the city. But I don't kind of buy the argument that, you know, what the city needs is 44 stories of luxury condominiums, because we have so many vacancies in the city of properties that are, one can only assume, are kind of created for people at a certain income bracket. And no part of the Oney Group's development scheme is to provide low-income housing. I mean, obviously, they have to. They either have to provide units in their building, which they are absolutely not going to do, or provide the city with a cash payout, which, you know, may sound like a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of what the city is spending on affordable housing, is really a drop in the bucket. So we certainly need more housing in this city. I don't think anybody's denying that. But if we have innumerable high-end rentals and condominiums that are sitting vacant in this particular neighborhood, I don't see how adding more is going to solve that problem.
We were talking on KUOW last week about the drive to save the Showbox and the drive to preserve Seattle's soul. And one of my guests, the journalist Erica C. Barnett, warned us about nostalgia. I want to know what you think of this. Mm-hmm.
When you're in your 40s, you will look back on the time when you were in your 20s. For me, it was Austin in the 90s. Man, that was the best.
Like, that was the coolest.
That was
Austin
the coolest
the
time that it's ever been. It sucks now, and everybody's boring, and there's nothing good there. But of course, like some part of that is you wish you were in your 20s. And, you know, people are in their 20s now having a different experience. And there's light rail. People can connect to more parts of the city than they've ever been able to connect to without driving a car. There's art spaces all over the city that weren't there. Now, they might not be in the areas where you remember them from when, you know, from the 90s or the 2000s. But, I mean, my concern about specifically things like the Showbox and, you know, changing our historic preservation laws so we can say this has to be a music venue or a bookstore or a record store or a video store in perpetuity forever is that, like, that's great if we want the city to be a museum for people my age. But and so I'll always be able to go to Scarecrow Video and I'll always be able to go to Finney Books and I'll always be able to go to, you know, name your favorite place. But people who are in their 20s will have less opportunities and less spaces to create a city for them.
What's your take on that?
I understand her point of view, but I think in as it pertains to the Showbox, I think it certainly sells the venue's cultural significance, you know, very short. You know, I have been at shows at the Showbox in my 20s and my 30s, and I was there just a month ago seeing a show. It's a place that people of all ages congregate, from the all ages shows that they do there to a show I saw last year, you know, 1,200 people with gray hair pogoing. And I don't go to the Showbox, and I don't think a lot of people go to the Showbox to try to relive their 20s, but to participate in the experience of live music in a venue that has meant a lot to them and continues to mean a lot to them, and you also see meaning a lot to young people who are going there for the first time. I absolutely agree with Eric in the sense that there are punk rock venues that are occurring right now that I'm too old to know about.
And they don't want you there.
They don't want me there. I look like a narc, you know. So they don't want me there, and that's fine. These are spaces that are catering to this particular age group, and I think that that's very true what you said. However, I think to assume that people want to save the Showbox because they want to relive an earlier time in their life is, I think, selling a lot of people in the city short. And I think is making some, borderline offensive suggestions as to what their motivations are for wanting to save the place. I don't want to relive my 20s. I don't want to relive my 30s. I want to be in this moment right now. But in this moment right now, you know, I want to go to a place that feels special and has history, not history that I have history with, but has history for decades before I even knew it existed. And you know, I think that one of the issues we tend to have in Seattle, we've had from the very beginning, is because the city is such a relatively young city, we have difficulty recognizing what is worth saving and what isn't. And it's easy when it's, oh, this is Pioneer Square. This is the historic area of town. The buildings are all brick. You know, let's draw a line around that, save that. But, well, this building was built in the 50s. I don't know. You know, we could knock that down and put four townhouses there. I don't know if that really kind of, qualifies. And, you know, I think that that is one of the curses of living in such a young city is that we don't, you know, our history is so shallow in a lot of our neighborhoods that we don't really have a sense of what's worth saving and what isn't worth saving. But I do think that when almost 100,000 Seattleites sign a petition, you know, they show up at city council meetings, they call their representatives and they share their stories about how important this place is to them. I think if Erica was, in fact, at the city council meeting on Monday, she would have seen the 17-year-old girl that got up and pleaded for city council to save the Showbox because she had seen some of her favorite shows there and she wanted to perform there one day. You know, she saw she would have seen me, a 42-year-old musician who has played there innumerable times, seen shows over the past 20 years there. I wanted to save this place. She would have seen, you know, someone in their 60s getting up and talking about how important the Showbox was at a period even before I was there. So I understand her point. I think it's applicable in certain in certain instances, but I think that the Showbox is a very different element altogether.
Ben Gibbard, Death Cab for Cutie, and the new album comes out this Friday, next Friday?
Next Friday, August 17th, yeah.
Thank You for Today is the name of the album, and great talking with you. Thanks for coming in.
Of course, it was an honor.
And here's an update on that drive to save the Showbox Theater. This morning, three local historic preservation groups announced they have nominated the Showbox for landmark status. That's just one strategy to save the building. The Seattle City Council is expected to vote soon on legislation to temporarily expand the Pike Place Market Historic District to protect the Showbox Theater. Thanks again to Ben Gibbard of Death Cab for Cutie. The new album's called Thank You for Today, and here's a track called Autumn Love.